97.5 The Fanatic.
Man, gotta give it up for YouTube Mello getting the job with Portland. Carmelo Anthony comes in. It was his first game tonight, Josh Rabick, who's producing this program. And man, you knew that he was gonna get the shots up. He missed from 20 feet in the opening 30 seconds. That was Portland's first shot of the game. Carmelo Anthony gets up. He also took the second shot. He hit a three. First points of the game for Portland. Then over the course of it, he would miss 10 out of 14 shots that he took.
Let it ride!
Yeah, there was a lot of that. And then Carmelo, throwing it back to like 2006, tried to climb the ladder and get a two-handed jam over Jackson Hayes. And if you've seen Jackson Hayes, you know that probably didn't go all that well. Look, it's good to see Carmelo Anthony back out there. It really is. He got 10 points in the game, which like is remarkable, coming off of the street and scoring 10 points in an NBA game. But it is awesome to me that Carmelo Anthony got 14 shots up in his debut. It's like if Kobe were to come back, like, you know that Kobe's getting 25 shots up. There's no doubt about it. John in South Jersey's next on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, John.
Hey, Joe. How you doing?
Great. How are you?
Good. I'm just so torn about the Eagles team. I guess I'm looking for a little guidance, I guess. I don't know. I watch them, and it's so frustrating. You know, hundreds of callers called in, you know, railed against that. But then in the back of my mind, there's this thought that they'd probably be 7-3, maybe even 8-2 if they had a good wide receiver. And then I go, is it really all that bad? I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are on it. I'm just trying to see if I'm out of my mind or if there's a little bit of legitimacy to that.
Well, it depends on, you know, John, what your expectation of the team to be is. Like, they're certainly not in that bottom tier. Like, they're talking about making the playoffs. If they take care of their business, they're still a playoff team. So it's not like you're rubbing elbows with Cincinnati or Miami or Washington or anything like that. It's just the question is the team a Super Bowl contender? And I think that is probably a little bit outside of the reach at this point. So, I mean, it's not that bad. Because, like you said, if Aguilar makes the catch, if Arthego Whiteside makes the catch, you know, you're picking up three more wins probably. But I think there are a lot of teams that could say that.
Yeah, and I think with the expectations being so high going into the season, I think it feels like maybe more of a letdown than it actually is in reality. But I don't know. I think maybe next year if they get a couple of receivers, I don't expect them, if they get in the playoffs, which I don't really think they will, to make much noise anyway. But maybe if they come back next year, make a couple smart signings, sign a couple of receivers, I think that maybe they could make a run. And then I just want to comment on the Flyers coach's comment about the players.
Yes.
I think I don't have a problem with it at all. I think it's refreshing to finally have a coach who actually has a pulse. So I'm all for it. I mean, if it's going to get these guys going, then I think it's great.
Well, a lot of times, Sean, thanks for the phone call. Appreciate you weighing in tonight. You hear, in hockey especially, hockey players are not great quotes most of the time. They're machines. They're machines that are designed over an 82-game season to see how many times they can recycle the same 15 words over and over and over again. PR staffs are incredibly well-trained, and coaches are masters at this because they have to address the media more often than anybody else. Alain Vigneault has never been that way. And I think he'd be hard-pressed to be that way. He wasn't that way in New York, wasn't that way in Vancouver. It doesn't seem like he's going to be that way here in Philadelphia. Whether it works or not, who knows? But I do think, look, people don't like it. I kind of do. I think that there's something to be said for coaches that wage wars in the media. Like, people crush Bill Parcells for doing it. I thought it was an excellent motivational technique when he's subtly digging at his players in their press conferences and stuff like that. I think it's good. Not everybody likes it, and not everybody's going to respond the same way. But when Vigneault does it, you know, obviously there was no strong response tonight, but we'll see how things go in the next week or so here.
You know what I mean? I'm happy.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that, Byrne. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. Replacement-level wide receivers would help out a lot. Which is to say, wide receivers that aren't actively hurting you out there. Nelson Aguilar has been a receiver, if you believe Pro Football Focus, the worst wide receiver in the NFL from a metric standpoint, and obviously, therefore, has been one that hurts you more than he helps you. Scott in South Jersey's next on The Fanatic. Hey, Scott.
Yeah, how are you guys doing tonight?
Doing okay. How are you?
Doing good.
Good.
All right. So I got three reasons why the Eagles lost this game,
okay.
And they go as follows. Second half field position. I never thought that fielding a punt would be so important, but I saw Boston Scott hit the triple crown when it comes to fielding a punt, where he had no business fielding it, calling a fair catch, where he had 10 yards of room, and I don't even know, man. That was bad. But do you think
in a one possession game, every one of those counts? Sorry, Scott, didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's pretty common. Do you think Doug has an affinity for these guys who are Darren Sproles built? Because I honestly didn't think that a Boston Scott had any business being on the field, whether it's a run pass option or whatever. Like, Miles Sanders is way better than him at everything.
I agree with that, Scott. I don't know if he has the affinity for Sproles-type people like he does Sproles, which is, you know, pretty obvious. But I guess the question is, like, you're not going to have Sanders out there for every single snap. You know, who else are you going to put out there besides Boston Scott?
I agree. Do you guys happen to have any stats on, like, what their second-half average field position was? Because it couldn't have been farther than the 15-yard line. It was absolutely ridiculous for an offense that you can't get any big plays out of. They need that field position.
Well, Scott, you know what? I'll take a look at that for you. Thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it. I'll pull it up right now and see where Philadelphia has started every single one of their second half drives. So the first one started on their 26, their 19, their 3, their 20, they're 12, they're 6, they're 12. Yep, that's pretty bad. That's pretty bad starting field position. So you're right on the money there with that being your evaluation. So, you know, it's hard for me to argue there. 610-632-0975. It did feel that bad, too. It's not like it was, really? Their starting field position was that bad? Because they had the one drive that they went 95 yards. And other than that, it was like pulling teeth just to get first downs. Punt Fest 2019 was not super fun to watch. And if you were a fan of another team, if you're not a fan of the Eagles, there's no way you're last until the end of that game. With all the punts, that I guarantee you, you're on Hallmark movies or HGTV or something. You're out. You're doing red zone. That was tough. Now, to be fair, though, Boston Scott, like, I don't want to crush Boston Scott either. Because Boston Scott had, like, 7 carries in the game. And was not really supposed to be a massive part of the game plan. They're hoping that they get Jordan Howard back. Their running back room's kind of a mess. With Darren Sproles' injury, and it's clear. I don't know what has happened specifically. I know the broad strokes. I don't know what specifically has happened with Corey Clement. I don't know if they just don't like how he's recovered from his injury, which is entirely possible. He's had the quad situation and everything else, and, you know, all of that. So who knows if they're literally down to their last one standing, and it happened to be Boston Scott. I mean, it would make sense, but it is a shame in a game against the Patriots that ends up being the route that you have to go. But quite frankly, with Darren Sproles being hurt, Jordan Howard being hurt, you didn't have anywhere else to go. Let's go to Ed in Allentown next on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, Ed.
Hey, what's going on, man? I absolutely love the show.
Oh, thank you, man. Appreciate that.
Hey, so I wanted to bring up a point. I find it really hard to believe that, you know, every NFL team has at least 6 wide receivers on their team. And these, you know, to get to the NFL in the wide receiver in the NFL level is obviously means that you're pretty proficient at your job.
Right.
And I just find it really hard to believe that all of the receiving corps in Philadelphia has somehow managed to make it to the NFL, get signed by the Eagles, and then completely forget how to run routes, completely forget how to catch balls or tap toes or anything. And I don't want to say that it seems like the Eagles may have a chemistry issue between the quarterback and the receiving corps, but there's something definitely going on. There's a lack of trust there. And I don't think it's because they are dropping them. I don't think it's, you know, there's Wentz not trusting them. I think it's they don't trust him. And if the earlier press conferences in the year where they were coming out and saying, you know, people are showing up late to practice, there's a lack of discipline on the team, is this a much bigger problem that we're not hearing about yet?
Well, and it's worth exploring, right? Because that was something that Lane Johnson mentioned. That was something that Orlando Scandrick mentioned. But then Doug Peterson and Malcolm Jenkins both came out and said that they didn't know anything about that. So, you know, conflicting reports, who knows about what specifically was going on there. I'm curious about the receivers not trusting Wentz, though. So I guess how do the drops factor into that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, if you look at the end of the game this week when Wentz went 0-for-3 on those first three downs when they were down on the 26-yard line, I mean, he throws the worm ball and then two sky balls. How could they trust him? I mean, he's paid $30 million a year and set the precedent for quarterbacks that are better than him to get paid in the upcoming years, and he just can't have the execution to go with the paycheck.
Well, I mean, certainly he did not have a good game against the Patriots. There's no doubt about it. But I think that Tom Brady has his receivers trusted. He had 14 first-half incompletions. I think the conditions were a little tough yesterday. Not excusing Wentz's play because it's not the first time that he's missed throws. But I think yesterday was kind of a tough one to get a read on.
Yeah, I mean, I could agree with that. I mean, I'll be the first to admit, I'm not an Eagles fan. I'm a general sports fan. But watching that, the Eagles had that game to win. It was their game to win, not the Patriots to lose.
Well, I mean, I think that you're right, by and large. And thanks for the phone call. Appreciate you weighing in. That was one of the problems that I had, was that it was right there and that the Patriots weren't running away. And, you know, I talked about it. I played beer league hockey and I'm a goalie. I've been on the wrong side of 8-0 games. And those don't keep me up at night because you were never in them. And Josh plays hockey. You know, he probably knows if you get smoked 8-0, there's nothing to really lose sleep over because you were never in it unless it was a team that you really expected to win. As a goalie, the ones that keep me awake are the ones that we lose 6-5 or 7-6 because I'm like, all right, you know, my team gives me 6 goals. That should be enough. That should be enough to win. And if I let in 7, then, like, I'm not doing my job. The Patriots score 17 points. Your defense, much maligned all season long, does what they're supposed to do, holds the Patriots to 17 points, and the offense is unable to get 2 touchdowns in the game. That's crazy. That's why this one hurts. Now, it is the Patriots. It's an AFC opponent, not nearly as important as your game against Seattle, even though all the games in the NFL are important. But you've got an NFC potential, depending on how things shake out, wild card foe in Seattle. Massive game. You got the dregs of the NFL that you've got to beat up on. And if you don't, then you're in trouble. Miami and Washington, New York, etc. And then you're playing for your season, pretty much, against the Dallas Cowboys on the 22nd of December. A lot of work still in front of you. It's not like the Patriots game was a death sentence or anything like that. It would have been a nice feather in the cap. And if you're going to build up the momentum where you're going to start steamrolling these teams, this one would have been a good one because you see what it's looked like for Baltimore since they've taken down New England. It's been all systems go. Chuck in Las Vegas is next on the Fanatic. Good evening, Chuck.
Hey, Joe. How's it going, man?
Great. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. Not feeling so great about this team. Not feeling great about this matchup coming up against Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett and, you know, Chris Carson and Bobby Wagner. This is a real team coming in. And, you know, I think we lose yet another one. Joe, I hate to say it, but I think we're going to 5-6 here.
Doesn't it feel strange to you that the Eagles are favored? Doesn't it feel like Seattle should be favored in this game?
Really? Huh. Yeah, that is. I would have thought Seattle would be a 1 or 2 point favorite in this game. That actually makes me feel a little bit better about the game.
Me too. I was all gloom and doom, and then I said that the Eagles are favored? It's crazy. So who knows? I mean, look, the line is what the line is, but for me, I kind of think the same lines as you do, Chuck, where it's like, hey, this is a team that's really playing for something. Seattle's trying to catch San Francisco. They just beat them on Monday Night Football, blah, blah, blah. But I don't know, man. Eagles have performed when the back's been against the wall. They have been good in that area.
True. And actually, regardless of what happens this weekend, I think, you know, this schedule is so incredibly easy that I could see them still making a run. Not because I feel great about this team, but simply because the schedule is that easy coming down the stretch. And, you know, like, I don't know what our end goal is here. You know, it's like, it feels like another year where, you know, maybe we squeak in the playoffs, best case scenario, and probably lose in the first round. And, you know, I'm just looking at the future, Joe. And, you know, Jason Kelsey's 32. You know, Fletcher Cox is getting up there in age. You know, these core guys, you know, I love them all. Brandon Graham, you know, I love these guys. They're the heart and soul of our team, but they're getting up there, and we just do not have any youth. So, Joe, I don't know. I don't know where we go from here. Next year in particular is not looking great in my eyes. And I don't know if you think it's going to be I hate to say it, but almost even a 1 or 2 year rebuild coming up. But I hate to even say that word. But,
well, I know it's tough, Chuck, but thanks for the phone call. But it doesn't have to be. Like, here's the thing. I think that it stinks to have to go through a rebuild. But I think it's worse to have to go through a rebuild and then refuse to do it. Like, I think that's, like, at this point, you got to rip off the Band-Aid if you're not getting it done against these top-tier teams. I'm sorry. I like the Eagles. I don't mean this to be a pejorative, but I do think that they're like a plucky team. I do think that the Eagles, in a spot where they're disrespected, can do damage. I truly believe that. But week in, week out, when you're looking at San Francisco, when you're looking at Seattle, when you're looking at New England, when you're looking at Baltimore, I don't put them in that tier, which is to say, like, if this is supposed to be the new norm, it kind of feels like the old norm where, you know, you win the division. And that's what you do. And it doesn't matter what happens after that. I thought that this was an Eagles team that kind of graduated to the next level, where it's, you have higher aspirations the whole way. And, you know, you're trying to get to the same level where the Patriots are, where it's every single year the Eagles are the team to beat in the NFC, period, no questions asked. And then they back it up on the field. That hasn't happened. And I'm not sure, like Chuck said, I'm not sure that it's possible to happen. But I would look at Seattle as a good team, as an example of how to do it, where you commit to the rebuild, you rip apart the team, the chunks that you don't need or the chunks that you can't continue with. Then you do a very quick rebuild by, you know, this is a novel concept, everybody doing your jobs. People are like, oh, you know, this guy was in the fourth round. This guy was in the fifth round. How could you have known? Somebody did. You know, I don't believe, by the way, that every team has a draft board of 1 to 300 or whatever, and is like, whoever's the next person up on the board, we're taking that. I think that there are some teams and some good teams that know what the values are, that understand where players will be selected based on how people feel about them, without necessarily thinking like, you know, this second round guy that we have is way better than our fourth round guy. But the perception around the league is that, you know, the second round guy is way better. So if we want this guy, we've got to take him in the second round, even if we like this other guy in the fourth round as well. All of that adds up to the fact that, like, I think that it's possible for the Eagles to do a quick rebuild, but you have to do your job. You have to do your job as a scout. You have to do your job as a GM. You have to do your job as a talent evaluator, developer, all of it. It seems like it's a daunting task. I don't know how far away the Eagles are. I mean, they won a Super Bowl 2 years ago. The team's gotten old in a hurry, but there are still some pieces that you should like about this team. not least of all Carson Wentz. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. You can also reach out on Twitter at Joe Torti, at 97.5 The Fanatic, at Josh Rabick on Twitter. And we asked a question earlier, and we've gotten some interesting responses to it, so I appreciate you guys playing along. I know that we're in the thick of Eagles season, and obviously a massive game looming against Seattle, still also licking our wounds after the loss to New England. But if you were the GM, you could take over any of the NFC East teams and start to kind of rebuild them in your own image, take them over. Now you're in charge. Who would you go with? And if it's the Eagles, what do you do? What's step one? 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. I'm still in shock. Still in shock that DeSean Jackson gets signed and you don't have anybody who can do a DeSean Jackson impression behind him. That's still absolutely bonkers to me based on what the offense looked like when Mike Wallace broke his leg against Tampa. Speaking of which, what's Mike Wallace doing nowadays? Anybody know? Anyone have a number on Mike Wallace? I'll look for that during the break, and I'll get back to you and see what I find. 610-632-0975. It's the Joe Torti Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5. The Fanatic, Josh Rabick, is producing this evening. Hanging out until midnight, like I said. Hopping on a plane tomorrow. The part's unknown. We'll let you know how that goes after we wrap that up. So you'll be in good hands for the rest of the week. So I'm going to cherish this final 31 minutes that we have together for this week. I've got to say, I'm just scrolling the trending topics on Twitter right now, and I've got to admit that if I would just, like, dropped in, I'd really be wondering what in the world is going on in the world today with all of the various trending Twitter topics, like Ask Eric Anything. I guess that's from NWA, by the way. That's right up Josh Rabick's alley. Get the, pro wrestling situation going on. What else have we got here? Athletes wearing jet-propelled wingsuits flying through the Tiananmen Cave. That's pretty rad. I'm into that. But still, it makes you wonder, like, aren't people in school and at work and stuff? I don't know. Also, the Eagles taking on Seattle. Opened up as a 2.5-point favorite. Let's see if there's been any line movement on that before we get to Josh and Marion Station. Of course, because the internet is blocked from gambling stuff, I can't see anything. Okay, that's fun. Let me just do one more last ditch effort to try to get around the overlords. I found one that they haven't blocked. I'll have to peruse this. In the meantime, let's go and figure out the GM game. If you could be the GM of any NFC East team and take it over and start running it, who would it be? If it's the Eagles, what would you do? Let's go to Josh and Marion Station next on The Fanatic. Hey, Josh.
Hey, what's up, man? How are you?
Doing great. How are you?
Good. I actually came into the conversation slightly late, but I thought you were asking about, like, what you would do with the GM of the Eagles, but I love the topic. And, you know, to answer the question, I feel like there's, all right, first of all, are you talking about being the GM of the Cowboys with or without Jerry Jones?
So in this scenario, I laid that out. I was like, in this scenario, Jerry Jones has been forced to abdicate the GM role. So, but he's still there. He still owns the team.
Well, I mean, if he still owns the team, I would be pretty nervous as a GM. The thing I think, though, is if Howie was out, I feel like the Eagles have a situation where Jeffrey Lurie is probably the best owner in the NFC East. And I feel like, you know, he's obviously loyal to a fault, right? The problem I feel like is Howie Roseman has been way too loyal to his guys and giving contracts like, you know, the Brandon Graham thing. It's not just that, like, you know, whether or not he overvalued Carson Wentz remains to be seen. I feel like you had to make that deal. But it's just, I feel like right now it's not going to be a quick rebuild for the Eagles, no matter what. So I would probably go with the Cowboys because I feel like they're a little closer. And I hate to say this, and I hope none of my friends are listening this late.
it's just a hypothetical, Josh.
This is James from Germantown, not Josh from Marion Station. But no, I just like, I feel like the Cowboys are a couple pieces away. And I feel like we always say that about the Eagles, but whatever those pieces are, whether it's the secondary or the wide receiver core, it always changes year to year. We're always just pieces away. The pieces just change every year. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, well, even the Super Bowl year, it was that the defensive backfield couldn't hold up. So you're right. Sometimes you just stumble on it.
Right. But I feel like every year, and even at the start of the season, right, when we're building up to the season and we're like, okay, this is what we need this piece and that piece. First of all, we're always much further away than we think we are. But second of all, there's always these shortcomings. So maybe as the GM of the Eagles, I would say, hey, let's not dump all this money into an aging Brandon Graham, into an aging Malcolm Jenkins. You know, and maybe let's spread it around a little bit such that we can maybe be a little bit more effective with slightly less known players, but maybe a little bit more effective players and not, you know, sell us so short. And by the way, you know, I think the Eagles can possibly rebuild this thing in the next year, but there needs to be real changes, man. And they're going to have to find a way to cut ties with some of our beloved players, man, because we're only getting older. I think we're the second oldest team in the league behind the Patriots. And we're not the Patriots.
No.
So.
Well, so part of that, Josh, obviously the people point out is, yeah, but once Darren Sproles is gone and once Jason Peters is gone, like the average goes down. And obviously that's all true. But to your point, there's still a ton of work to do. What would you do first?
If it were me, man, I you know what the one thing I will say is I was kind of upset, I think, like everyone else, when Howie Roseman didn't pick up a receiver at the deadline. But I feel like ultimately he knows that he's going to be... I feel like ultimately he knows that his, you know, he's going to be back next year and he's banking on this draft. So, I mean, the first thing I would do is obviously, because look, Carson Wentz is this team, right? That it's all going to revolve around him. So he has to go out and whether it's in the draft or free agency, bring in big new free agent wide receivers or draft wide receivers and completely change this offense and give him weapons because that's the only way we're going to know if we have a franchise quarterback. But I just wish real quick, I know you're going to come back. I feel like that the Philadelphia fan base needs to give Wentz the rest of the season and hopefully next season with a real wide receiver core because right now, dude, this is BS what he has.
Well, I don't know if anybody's really turning on him, Josh, and thanks for the phone call. It's people understand what he's working with. People understand that there's not a whole lot of talent in the wide receiving core as it were or as it's currently constructed. The play calling doesn't feature a two tight end system in the passing game and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I think that there are people jumping off of the Wentz bandwagon that weren't already there. Let me put it that way. A lot of the people that you're hearing, oh, I don't know if Carson Wentz can get it done, were Nick Foles people anyway, or Cowboys fans living in Philadelphia. Josh Rabick telling me that the Eagles are -2. I think the line opened at 2.5. So the Eagles are -2, and the point total is 48, second highest of all the games this week. So some fireworks, perhaps. Is that a good thing? The over-under of 48, it feels like it's a good thing for the Eagles.
Our biggest question marks are on the offensive side of the ball. So, I mean, it definitely does help. And when you watch the Patriots game, it was absolute disrespect. It was mainly cover one they were playing most of that game.
Nobody could pass, though. Like, nobody could pass in the game. You're right. There was total disrespect. I mean, more of that had to do with the wide receivers. But no one could pass. Like Tom Brady didn't look all that great in those conditions. Carson Wentz certainly didn't. He missed several throws that he absolutely should make. I don't know. Can't believe we're already on to Seattle, but we are. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. You can also reach out on Twitter at Joe Torti, at 97.5 The Fanatic, and at Josh Rabick. I think Justin Jefferson's the guy that I'd like if I were the Eagles. I do have questions. Obviously, if you're rebuilding through the draft or building through the draft, it's all good. But I'd feel a lot better if there was more of a track record for the Eagles being successful in those spots. You know what I mean? Like actually being able to evaluate talent. The two wide receivers that I remember of recent vintage that the Eagles scouted and drafted and developed were obviously DeSean Jackson and Jeremy Maclin. Those are the two that a lot of people still think of the best wide receivers in the Howie Roseman era, right? I think that you've got that. You're incredibly unclear about the recent history at the running back position. Now, LeSean McCoy, obviously, fine draft choice. No doubt about it. But I'm sorry, that 2017 running back draft was like, if you needed a running back, you literally couldn't miss. It feels like the wide receiver draft. For this year, I don't want the Eagles to get the one wide receiver that you don't want in this draft. I'm like, just look at Alabama and LSU. Like, both of them have like three guys that are going to be fine for you. Just go ahead and do that. Clemson's got 8,000 wide receivers in the NFL. Each of them as talented and freaky as the next one. Whether it's Martavis Bryant when he's not on the ganja, Sammy Watkins, DeAndre Hopkins, Mike Williams. Just like, look in those places. Find those dudes. For a while, it was Georgia Tech. For a while, you couldn't miss with Georgia Tech. It was Calvin Johnson and then Demaryius Thomas, who's a Calvin Johnson clone with like a little bit of the shine taken off. And then after that, it was Stephen Hill, who's like a Demaryius Thomas clone, but like too much of the shine was taken off and the hands weren't there, you know? But still, just don't get cute. That's all I'm saying, I guess, is just don't get cute. Hard to miss at positions that you need in this draft. Scouting staff, do your jobs. Howie, do your job too. So that Doug can do his job and Carson can do his job. And then we can do our jobs and support the team and be happy and everything else. As opposed to saying, wow, this is the worst wide receiving core since Doriel Green, Beckham, and Jordan Matthews, and Nelson Agholor. 610-632-0975, your phone number to join the conversation. Yep, remember? I was such a steal because they traded Dennis Kelly for Doriel Green, Beckham. Like you were going to get anything of value for Dennis Kelly. And spoiler alert, I think that he started for them way longer than Doriel Green Beckham started for you. Yikes. It's not great. All right, coming up on the other side, we have the final segment of the evening. That means we'll take a walk around the show, figure out how we got here to this place where we are right now. And then, of course, we also have the One More Thing segment of the program. So we'll get to that in a matter of seconds. So if you want to talk to Josh first, then you talk to me, 610-632-0975. It is the Joe Torti Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. We started out this program, we're coming out of Flyers hockey. Flyers falling to Florida on the road, 5-2. Morgan Frost, Nets won in his debut. So congratulations to Morgan Frost, but Ultimately, it was an avalanche of goals coming in from the Cats, even though Travis Sanheim beat Sergei Bobrovsky again. You did see Carter Hart getting pulled after four goals on 18 shots. Brian Elliott comes in. I'm sorry, Brian Elliott's just been playing better. He's just been, the results have been better than when Carter Hart's been in there. And there could be a lot of reasons for that. You know, there could be extenuating circumstances, matchups, whatever it is. From what you said, you feel better about having Brian Elliott in goal night in, night out. And that's not to say that Carter Hart's been bad, but there have just been some nights where Elliott's been just much more stable. But having said that, there's been nothing kind of going the right way for the Flyers in the recent stretch here to begin with. We knew that this particular run of games during November would be very difficult. They've been playing against some great teams. They've been playing against Toronto. They've been playing against Carolina, Montreal, Boston, Washington, right? And largely they survived that stretch, right? Like they beat Carolina, Montreal, Toronto, then Boston. Then they lost to the Capitals in the shootout, and the skid has kind of started now, where they lose to Washington, Ottawa, New York Islanders, and then the Panthers today. So they'll be back at it on, what, Thursday against Carolina on the road before heading home against Calgary on Saturday. So that's where we started out. And then we took on another hypothetical, which is something that we talked about during the 6 o'clock hour when I was on before the Flyers game. Specifically, if you could take over as GM of any of the NFC East teams, which team would you take over? By and large, we've gotten the response being the Eagles that you would take over. Carson Wentz being in place obviously is a major factor there. Dallas has been the second most popular answer, but we did get a vote for New York as well. People have talked about Jeffrey Lurie being the best owner. Do you think the Maras are on Jeffrey Lurie's plane when it comes to being owners? I mean, that's a pretty respected family.
That one's close because I think when you go back to like a Wellington Mara, I believe it was back when, I think there was a lot more tradition there.
Not so much now.
Yeah, not so much anymore.
Okay. And I have to say, too, and I've found this with a lot of my interests. Converts energy is something that's real, like a convert's enthusiasm. There, people talk about lifers all the time, and you know, if for example, like the Rooneys in Pittsburgh and the Browns, and like all of the families that you think of that have owned teams forever, the Fords. Yeah, like football's in your blood, and it's been in your family and stuff like that. But Jeffrey Lurie was not always like that. Bought the team, came in, super passionate about it and things like that. I think that you find as you get older, the interests that you adopt become much more addictive to you than the interest that you've always grown up on, whether it's learning how to play guitar or picking up a new sport or an activity or whatever. For some people, it's drone racing, which is exciting. I'm learning more and more about the people who race the drones. But long story short, I do think that Jeffrey Lurie's done a nice job as the owner, especially in recent history here, of kind of trying to find the balance of being hands-on and then letting the football people do the football stuff. But then that conversation naturally kind of meandered into the other side of it, which is, you know, now that the Eagles have not a hypothetical but a real-life game to play against Seattle, what can you take away from the New England game? What needs to get corrected ahead of the Seahawks game? And then looking kind of bigger picture, how bad are these issues that the Eagles have? How significant are the problems that they're going to have to work through when it comes to rebuilding back up to that Super Bowl contender caliber season? Is that a year away? Is it 2 years away? We've had kind of mixed results in terms of how people have felt about the prospects of that happening. But having said that, overall, you do just have to take care of one game against Seattle. And it's a game in which you're favored by two. Now, home field advantage is usually worth three. So if you want to say in your mind that Seattle's favored by one, fine. But there's no way that Seattle should be favored by one. You know what I mean? If you're looking at the game, That is a scream in Seattle plus, what, 4.5? 5? More? Based on what they've done and what the Eagles have done? If you believe in the whisper of the line's telling you that the Eagles are going to be okay. And that brings us, of course, to the often imitated, never duplicated, world famous, the one, the only, one more thing.
But there is one more thing.
Josh, you'll remember, as we are a technology-addicted society, and I certainly am, the sadistic pranks that people were pulling with the outlet stickers that they were putting up at the airport on random walls and stuff like that to try to get people to plug their phones into the stickers. That's some sadistic stuff, but I thought hilarious because it speaks to, like, you know, how addicted to technology we are, and you have to never be far away from a source of power for any of our devices. I admired the prankster that first did that, and I thought that was pretty awesome. It's a special kind of defeat to get fooled by a sticker when you're in desperate need of a charge. Saw something today that is, well, I'll let you know what you think. Well, I want to see what you guys think about this. There's somebody who did this with AirPods. They made 2D sticker printouts of the Apple AirPods and put them all over the ground and, like, places like that. So the people are walking, and it appears as though someone left an AirPod on the ground. My immediate thought was, if you get angry about this, I've got so many questions about you because you are diving down onto the ground for something that has been in someone else's ear. Just need to have it? Look, I get the times are tight for everybody, you know? Even with the economy booming, sometimes you don't have money to spend on AirPods. I don't even know how much AirPods cost. Do you have any idea how much AirPods cost?
No idea.
Okay. So I assume that it's a significant amount of money. I get finding things on the ground, finders keepers. If you're getting upset in the same way that you did about the outlet stickers because you're diving down to pick up a rogue AirPod and it turns out to be a sticker, that says more about you than the prankster. You got some issues there. That's bad.
Right. I mean, if somebody eats with a spoon disgustingly, I refuse to use it ever again. I'm that much of a germaphobe. I can't imagine seeing something that's been in somebody's ears go, oh, well, free stuff.
And I mean, so the other side of it is, like, if you want to, like, help somebody out and you're like, hey, somebody dropped their AirPod, let me return it to them. It's like a mild inconvenience for the would-be good Samaritans around there that are like, hey, I want to just, you know, see if anybody dropped an AirPod. But I can't believe that I saw on Twitter people actually getting upset about this. I can't believe you'd get amped up for something that's been in somebody else's ear. You know? Like, here's the thing. You see money on the ground. You don't know where the money's been. But also, you don't know where the money in your wallet's been. So you're like, all right, whatever. You can get over it. There are certain things that you're never going to be able to deal with. You see an AirPod on the ground or something like that. Yeah, you could just think, hey, this thing's been stepped on. Oh, that's no big deal. Take it to the next level. That's been deep inside somebody's ear. Strangely, though, in the most non-internet thing of 2019, I've only seen video of the prank being set up and not any of the reaction videos, which is super bizarre to me considering that's the payoff for a lot of people. But so far, nothing like that. I don't like it. It's gross. And may God have mercy on you if you're somebody who's diving on the ground after an AirPod sticker. But I don't feel bad for you. All right, that's going to just about wrap things up for the program. Thanks to everybody who called and tweeted in. All of my co-hosts for the evening really enjoyed mixing it up with you guys on social media and over the phone lines as well. And thanks to everybody who listened. Thank you very much to my producer extraordinaire, Josh Rabick. Josh, outstanding job. Thank you very much.
You got it, dude.
We will be back on the airwaves tomorrow, starting at 5 o'clock a.m. with the Fanatic at 5. So we'll be on right after this. It's the Joe Torti Show. Have a great night, everybody, on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.